You bring that up? But even as she spoke, an idea began to take shape. There was only one way to make that much cash in a single day, and it wasn't by blowing him. Suit yourself. He held the cigarette between his teeth. This is what it feels like, she thought, when there aren't any good options and the walls start closing in. This is when you make a move or die standing in the same pathetic town where you were born. Loyal knew exactly how much cash was in that packet. She thought through the options again. I'm going to Mimola.
Mimola? That's your solution? You're whacked.
She stood up and threw a backpack onto her shoulder. You got another idea? I'm listening.
You're just a kid. You've never even been inside a casino.
But I know poker. She picked up the remaining cash and stuffed it back in the envelope. Tell my uncle I never showed up today.
No.
He blew smoke out of the side of his mouth.
It's a bad idea.
You know I'm good, and you know I'm on a roll. He studied her hard, shook his head. You can come and watch, or you can stay here by yourself, but I'm doing this with or without you. He was silent. If everything goes well, we can get a room. It wasn't exactly a lie. If she won fast enough, they could get a room for a few hours. He smiled and picked up his car keys. Chapter 5. Jamie started the engine of Jack's Taurus to let it warm and crawled over to the passenger seat while he locked up the store. Her fingers were freezing, but her gloves had gone missing days ago. She stuck her hands in her armpits and thought about the odds of beginner's luck. It could happen. It's a long shot, but it only takes one lucky streak. One big hand under the right circumstances could turn everything around. Mimola was 1 hour away, close enough to be back before nightfall if they got in and out quick. Thinking about the possibility of losing Loyal's money, she almost changed her mind. But then, as the lights in Jack's store went out and he came running through the sleet, a little adrenaline kicked in. You gotta be in it to win it. Despite the odds, she had to try her luck. They took the county road south to loop around town and avoid the traffic at the caution light out by the Walmart. A mile from the interstate, they'd passed a series of neon billboards, brilliant and crackling with electricity. It tingled weirdly on her face, and she rubbed her cheeks. Do you feel that?
Yeah. Takes some juice to light that much neon. That buzz is why the cows won't graze over there.
He turned onto the ramp for the interstate. Rain drizzled against the intermittent headlights of oncoming traffic, wipers cutting through the ice thickening on the windshield.
When we get there, I might play some roulette, see if my numbers hit. You know, just get the feel of the place.
I thought you'd been there.
It's been a while.
What numbers do you play?
When's your birthday?
They were so new they didn't even know each other's birthdays yet. 7:10.
Then that's what I'm playing.
He wedged his cold fingers under her left leg and she shivered from the unexpected chill.
Sorry, he said. I left my gloves at home this morning.
Home. She thought about that word for a moment, then dismissed it. They spent what nights they had together sleeping on the futon in his office, and once, a motel. He hogged the bed so much that at times she almost preferred her cot at the trailer. But Jack had been good to her, and now he was trying to help her out of this mess. Secrets like this kept lovers close. Still, her stomach turned every time she thought about having slit open that envelope. She wished she hadn't eaten that salami at Angel's. She dug through a backpack, hoping to find some crackers, anything to settle her stomach.
You got your ID, right?
He gave her a pseudo-daddy look, and she huffed.
And watch yourself, okay? At the casino.
I can take care of myself.
I'm not joking, he said. Keep your drink covered, and don't let anyone near it. Guys will slip something in your drink just to get an advantage at the table. Be careful.
Okay, I hear you, she said. I grew up around Loyal's crowd. Those guys spend entire weekends blitzed out on crack and weed. I got this. She wanted to reassure him, needed the reassurance herself. In home games, she got away with a lot of tricks. But in a place like Mimola, there'd be cameras and floor bosses, people watching her hands all the time. He squeezed her leg.
Maybe we should check in. You know, get a room for a few hours.
only if things go well and there's time. Otherwise, I've got to get back for a game at Keating's. Jack turned in his seat.
You're playing a house game at Judge Keating's?
No, I'm dealing it. She didn't look at him, but stared out the windshield, hoping he'd put his eyes back on the road.
Huh. He pay you for that?
Yeah. $100 and the winner usually tips something.
You dealing legit?
Depends. She didn't really want to discuss it. How far to the casino?
Not far,
he said.
You can be hard to read sometimes.
No harder than anyone else. It's called a poker face. They passed a car in the right lane and water sprayed the windshield, hitting her door. They skidded a little, and she held her breath until they were clear.
You're getting in a little deep, you know. Your uncle runs a business that might not be suited for a girl.
I've been around it most of my life. I know how things work. You get the money from my uncle, right? And get it in the bank without anyone noticing? What's the big deal? She was crossing a line here, but he'd brought it up, and Loyal was so secretive about his business that she wondered if Jack really knew any more than she did.
It's a lot more than that, but you don't need details.
Sounds complicated, she said, hoping he'd continue. Sometimes when she played dumb, he'd brag a little and she'd find out some new detail. She'd grown up driving around the county with her uncle and Toby, hanging out in the truck while Loyal went inside a store or pub and cleared a machine of cash. Running his routes with him was how she'd learned to drive in the sleet and ice, learned how to take a sharp curve at the top of a rise. She'd been to each location, knew exactly how big his operation was, as wide as the county and then some. Big enough nobody talked about it, and profitable enough to pay cops to look the other way.
People get to gamble. Win now and then. Makes them feel good. Everybody gets a cut. Everybody keeps their mouth shut,
he said.
But cops can be tricky. New ones come along, old ones get promoted. They get uppity for no good reason and decide not to play along.
They skidded sideways when they hit a puddle and she decided to drop it and let him concentrate on driving. She worried about the tread on his tires, but she fought the urge to mention it, focusing instead on the droplets of water smearing the windshield, the rhythm of the wipers, the lightning off in the distance. After 30 miles of interstate, they hit a second cluster of neon billboards, the drizzle catching in the lights like gems, and then there was the exit for the casino. The landscape was clear-cut to the point of desolation, as though a bomb had detonated and wiped out trees in every direction for a mile. Inside the gates, though, it was all gloss and shine. Even the rain looked pricey. In the rainy afternoon light, the marquee and its spotlit fountain glowed like a landing strip. The valet, smiling in his yellow slicker, motioned them to the curb, but Jack waved him off and headed to the 5-story parking garage in the back. Jamie caught her reflection in the window and wished she'd gone with more eyeliner and a different top. She brushed a stray hair off her shoulder, thinking how Angel would be appalled at her for wearing a sweater to a casino. Her hair glistened in the reflection when she swooshed it out from behind her ears, and she reminded herself that she wasn't so plain, that she could be pleasing with a little more effort. Inside the foyer, Jack put on his sunglasses and pulled his hoodie over his head. The entrance was high and wide, with an overblown elegance of marble floors, wood paneling and brass lamps, attendants in jackets and ties, a chandelier reflecting like firecrackers in Jack's glasses. Closer to the slot machines, the ceiling dropped low and the carpet got thick, but it wasn't enough to soften the seizure-inducing strobe lights or drown out the pings and bells and mechanical voice screaming, "Wheel of Fortune!" The place was full of wealthy people flaunting their privilege, middle-aged couples on spending sprees and second honeymoons, and losers, the ones on the down and out and pushing their luck. An old woman chain-smoking and camped out in front of a slot machine, an unshaved man wedged in a corner and seemingly asleep. Gambling was a community affair. Lots of people lost, so a few could win. Almost everybody left a little closer to broke. The roulette tables were full, so she and Jack walked past the cash cage toward the back. A cover band was set up by the bar, and they might have been playing Hotel California, but over the din of the crowd, it was hard to tell. The poker room was tucked in the back of the casino, with a velvet rope at the perimeter that kept spectators at a distance from the tables, a security measure to minimize collusion. She knew the story. Players working in teams. A spotter across the room with a cell phone at waist level snapping pictures of an opponent's hole cards and relaying them to their partner with hand signals.
God, I miss this. I used to play here sometimes. Watch me, and you'll get the hang of it,
Jack said, and took a seat at a Texas Hold'em table near the front. He tugged his hoodie low over his eyes. Jamie knew his tough guy look wouldn't intimidate the half-drunk rednecks who'd been waiting all day for him to show up with his big fat wallet. But he'd brought her here, and that meant they were a team. She owed him a little loyalty. So she stood on the rail and watched as he bought in for $200. The cards went flying, and the action opened with Jack. He peeked at his two hole cards and bet 20. Two players called his bet. The dealer laid out the flop, the first three community cards, and the beginnings of what might amount to a 10-high straight. Jack raised the pot by 30, and the two players stayed with him. The fourth card was a king, and Jack bet 40 more chips. The first guy folded, but the guy to his right scratched his nose and tensed his jaw, the snake tattoo on his neck twitching as he squelched a smile and called Jack's bet. The dealer turned the last card. The action was on Jack, and he bet another 40. Mr. Itchy Nose raised it to 100. Jack called the bet and turned over his poker kings, clearly convinced he had the best hand. Itchy Nose smiled big now and showed the straight he'd caught on the flop. Jack had lost his whole stack in one play. Fucking hell. He knocked his chair over when he pushed away from the table. Shit. This is no way to start the night. What was that? Jamie asked when he got to the sideline.
Asshole. Who fucking plays a straight like that?
He yanked his sunglasses off. Sweat was thickening on his forehead, and a vein pulsed wickedly at his throat. He was angrier than Jamie had ever seen him. But he'd played it all wrong, and she couldn't keep from saying so.
You should have seen that coming, she said. He had you all the way.
Fucker played a 7-8 against my kings. He just got lucky.
He didn't get lucky. He played it perfectly. He didn't raise the pot because he had the nuts and he wanted to keep you in the hand. Playing it slow like that guaranteed he'd take all of your chips.
What are you talking about?
He took off his sunglasses and rubbed the bridge of his nose.
No one folds three kings.
You should have. It was a bad call. He trapped you and you didn't even think twice.
Jamie knew she should shut up, but it had been so obvious. Plus, his jaw muscles popped out when he made that bet. He scratched his nose so you wouldn't see him smile. Jack pointed at her with his sunglasses.
So how would you have played it?
You bet 100 and he re-raises. You gotta look at the board and see he was working a straight. You gotta fold that. You gotta know right there you're beat. Fold it and walk away.
Jack shrugged.
What if he's bluffing?
If he was bluffing, he would have raised the flop. He was trapping all the way. Jack unzipped his hoodie and glared at Itchy Nose.
So how do you know this shit?
Mom taught me.
That right?
Jack pulled out the envelope and gave her a $100 bill.
You think you can beat that guy?
Instantly, she wished she hadn't mentioned her mom, the ex-felon. No one needed to know about her, and how when other moms were teaching their daughters to bake, Phoebe was showing Jamie how to peel an ace off the bottom of a deck. They used to stay up all night playing cards. They'd fall asleep at the table, wake up the next morning, and play through another day. Jamie could never get enough. Kitchen table poker was one thing, but this place was for real. And without the deck in her hand, the playing field would be level. This place attracted suckers after a quick fix. Dads trying to stretch a paycheck. Old timers hoping to turn a pension check into another month of early times in Marlboro's. Maybe she was just another chump, but she needed to turn things around and she needed to do it today. Besides, no one was forced to come here and put their money on the table. Luck was just that. It could hit her just as easily as it hit anyone else. She took the bill from Jack and said, I'll need two of those. Itchy Nose ordered a round for the table. He lifted his glass toward them and downed it.
Fucker,
Jack said. He took out another bill and Jamie took the cash. She hesitated, but she had made this mess and he was trying to help.
She took the money and the chair opposite the dealer.
Yo, Hoodie sent his girlfriend,
Itchy Nose said, and the men at the table laughed. She saw their sideways glances, their subverted smiles, and sensed these guys had a history, that she was an outsider. Her throat constricted. The dealer counted out 200 chips and slid them to Jamie. Her hands trembled as she collected her chips. The dealer shuffled the cards and sent them around the table. She lifted the corners of her hole cards. A 5-7 offsuit. Not worth the cost of a big blind. She fumbled the cards when she slid them back to the dealer and was sure the other players noticed. They'd be watching for any sign of weakness. She jammed her fingers under her thighs and sat on them while the hand played out. The salami rumbled in her belly. Up close, she could see Itchy Nose's tattoo. It was a colorless black job, cheap, like he'd only paid for the outline. She counted backward from 10 to try to slow her breathing. He caught her looking at him and smirked.
Name's Damon, he said. Tough break for you, boy.
Jamie nodded. She didn't care what his name was, and there wasn't any reason to talk to him. She owed him nothing. His nails were chewed, the calluses thick but clean, a few nicks on his knuckles. His hair was the color of sawdust, and he was jumpy in the forearms. She guessed he worked some kind of labor that needed muscle but didn't involve grease. He raised the blinds, picked up a few dollars, and watched her watching him. She ignored the hot nausea burning the back of her throat and waited for the next hand. Playing in a casino was a much bigger rush than playing online, where no one could see her face or the movements of her hands or stare stupidly at her. An old guy at the end of the table stared openly at her chest, dropped his hands to his lap, and smiled. She clenched and unclenched her fist, testing her fingers. They were steadier now, but she didn't trust them yet.
Excuse me, miss, Itchy Nose was talking to her. You got a vein right here, he said, pointing to his temple. It's blue, and for some reason it's throbbing.
Another player laughed, and Jamie knew she was going to blush. In 10 seconds, her whole face would turn red, and there wasn't anything she could do to stop it. For her 13th birthday, her uncle had taken her and Toby hunting. They'd sat in a deer blind for hours. Toby bored and carving his initials on the wall, waiting for the sun to rise. When it did, a buck stepped out into the meadow, just 50 yards away. Loyal lined up the shot for her with a new rifle he bought from the Walmart and told her not to be a pussy. The buck stood solid and gray, morning dew setting around his flanks, and Jamie saw something she'd never seen before. Something innocent, something majestic, something proud.
Now.
Loyal had whisper-shouted, and she'd pulled the trigger. The blast crushed her eardrums and ripped a hole in the buck's neck. He staggered sideways 2 steps, and then his front legs folded. His back quarters hit the ground less gracefully, legs twitching like he was pedaling a bike. She couldn't take her eyes off him, off what she'd done. That's when the trembling had first started. That's how she felt now. The dealer tapped the table in front of her and said,
It's on you, miss.
She peeked at her hole cards and found a pair of queens. Another shot of adrenaline hit her bloodstream. She did the math. The right bet was 40. She reached for her chips and knocked the stack over, counted them out, and tossed them to the middle. Itchy Nose said,
I'll see the flop.
And he and another player called the bet. It was her hands. They were giving her away. Guys like these would call her all the way to the end, thinking she was trying to outplay them. Heat flushed up to her ears. The dealer laid out the first 3 cards, and the 10 of diamonds was the highest card on the flop. Itchy Nose bet 100, and she knew he was trying to bully her. If she called him, she might as well bet her whole stack. Chances were her queens were still the best hand. And besides, if she didn't have the guts to play queens, she might as well fold and go home to face Loyal. Itchy Nose was staring hard at her, and that jumpy muscle in his neck had smoothed out. His eyes went a little unfocused when she stared back. A classic bluff. She pushed all her chips to the middle and felt the edges of the room tilt away when he and the other guy called the bet. Whether or not she won this hand, she'd never forget these bastards.
Three all-ins, the dealer said. Turn them over?
Itchy Nose flipped over a pair of twos. The other player turned over a jack nine. They'd pegged her for weakness and come gunning. Idiots. Her fingers seemed like jumpy little animals, but somehow she got the queens turned over. The dealer placed the fourth community card on the table. An ace. The jack nine was drawing dead, and Itchy Nose needed a two to hit a three of a kind. The dealer turned over the last card. A seven.
Fuck me,
Itchy Nose said.
Queens are good,
the dealer said, and slid the pot toward Jamie. The relief was a lot like being high. Too high. Winning was supposed to feel good, but something dark twisted in her gut. She grabbed her chips and stood up. Part of her wanted to laugh, part of her needed to run.
Don't leave now,
Itchy Nose said, the snake tattoo bunching at his throat.
You gotta give me a chance to win it back.
But she knew better. They'd each taken their chances, and it could have come out different. She shoved the chips into Jack's hands and hurried down the hall to the bathroom. A few minutes later, Jack called to her from outside the bathroom door.
You need anything in there?
Jamie was slumped on the floor.
Got any disinfectant on you?
Are you on the floor?
That's gross, get up.
Jamie flushed the toilet and pushed herself up. I'll be out in a minute. She braced herself on the sink and cupped some water to her mouth. The nausea was gone. She bought a disposable toothbrush and some aspirin from the vending machine, ignoring the impulse to stock up on high-priced condoms.
Babe, come out here. That was vicious.
Her legs were shaky, but she managed to get out the door.
You look better. Less green.
He pulled her to a quiet spot near the water fountain, his eyes wild like when he was hard.
You won $600.
He grabbed her arms. I got lucky, she said. But she couldn't deny it. She felt the rush too.
It took guts to go up against that guy. It was more than luck. It was sick. You're on a heater, he said. You need to strike while you're hot.
Maybe. She leaned against the wall and locked her knees. Jack said,
we need a plan.
Okay, she said, nodding. The aspirin burned in her stomach, which meant that her headache would let up soon. Here's a plan. Those guys I just beat, I made them look like fools in front of their friends. They'll come gunning for me now. I'll buy back in and wait for the right moment to raise the stakes. They won't back down. All I have to do is wait for the right cards to come along.
What about Keating?
I'll call Toby. If he asks her, my mom will cover it. I mean, what's it pay? $100? I need $3,000. She realized if she won enough, she wouldn't need the judge's recommendation for Toby. She could pay for the summer camp herself. I'm doing this. She held out her hand. And I need it all.
You're so hot right now. I love it when you get fired up.
He hugged her then, and she felt him getting hard. She smirked and pushed him away. Maybe we'll get that room after all. When she got back to the table, Itchy Nose had bought in for another $1,000. He joked with the new dealer and ignored her when she took a chair at the end of the table. She slid $2,500 to the dealer. But the limit was $2,000. Already she looked like a rookie, not even knowing the table limits. She'd sworn to herself that she wouldn't play the first round, let herself relax and tamp down her nerves. Hated it when she saw the ace, king of hearts, staring out at her from her hole cards. She was out of position, and the first to act and a little horrified, when five players called her $100 bet. The flop came. No ace, no king, all black clubs. She knew she should bail here, but checking would tell everyone she'd missed. She bet the pot, $500 and change, and was proud of how still she was able to keep her hands. With nothing to back it up, though, her bet was too large.
Here she comes again,
Itchy Nose said. He tossed some chips into the middle and called the bet. It was almost like he knew she was bluffing, and it made her think he'd picked up on some sort of tell. It was possible. She sat still, focused on the center of the table, but couldn't help cutting her eyes at him to see if he was watching her. He smiled. One other player stayed in the hand. She ran the calculations. There was $1,500 in the pot, There was 1,400 left in her stack. The dealer turned the fourth card. A king. She had high pair now, but there were four clubs on the board. She felt calm as she thought it through. Neither of them had bet like they had a flush. This was the perfect spot to front the nuts and back it up with the pair. She'd made this move 100 times online and it almost always paid off. All in, she said, keeping her hands in her lap.
I want to count,
Itchy Nose said. She slid her stack toward the dealer for him to count. Her hands were steady allies now.
1,480,
the dealer announced. Itchy Nose watched her closely. She turned to face him directly to convey some confidence in her move and felt a little sick when he said,
Call.
He seemed unfazed. The top of her head went cold when he turned over the 7-8 of clubs. She'd played one hand. She'd lost it all. Jack shook his head, walked away.
Let me give you a tip, honey,
Itchy Nose said, laughing and stacking his chips.
It's your hands. They shake when you got the nuts, but when you bluff, they're still as pond water.
She followed Jack through the casino, to the entrance and out to the parking lot. There was nothing to say. An hour later, he dropped her at the curb in front of Angel's house, because there was no way she could show up at that game and face Keating and her uncle. Chapter 6. Phoebe loved the sounds of the game. The shuffle of the cards, the sifting of chips, the occasional snap of a beer can popping open, the strike of a match, the sizzling tobacco of a fresh cigar. She couldn't remember when she'd been up this late in the company of men who weren't wearing uniforms. It almost felt like old times. She had arrived at Keating's house at 8:05. Keating's two-story Tudor and its sweeping roofline sat at the end of a long drive, with the usual rides parked along the street. Cadillacs, Lincolns, and a sleek black Lexus. While they poured drinks, she made her way to the game room, took her place at the center of the table and waited. She felt sure it wasn't a parole violation to deal a poker game at a judge's house, but she'd been in the system long enough to know that anything could land her in lockup if she came up against a pissed-off cop with a hard-on for trouble. Still, it was a chance she had to take. When Toby had come to the diner with the message that Jamie was going to miss dealing a big game at Judge Keating's, Phoebe had seen it as an opportunity to do something to help her daughter. Maybe build a little goodwill. Loyal would be angry at the change, but he might go easy on the girl if he had a decent night. She could throw him a few good cards for the sake of family peace. Besides, as much as she despised him, she owed him for taking in her kids when she'd gone away.
I took a cut for the dealer, Keating said, handing Phoebe some folded 20s as the men took their seats at the table.
Introductions were quick. Most of the players, Phoebe guessed, were men immune to losing money at poker from years of excursions to Atlantic City or Las Vegas. Three were from out of town and wouldn't know her or her history, or that when she wanted to, she could pull an ace out of thin air. Six players, $6,000 less the dealer pay, unless someone busted out early and bought back in. She pegged the linebacker for that, pocket money for Keating and Loyal. The rancher and the state rep probably had the good sense to see their attendance here as just another hazing ritual along their climb to power. An invitation to Keating's home game was an honor, and everyone expected a few laughs, even if all they left with was a sick story about a bad beat. Hardly anyone was stupid enough to expect a win, but whichever way the night went, they'd all remember the moment when their luck ran cold. The big guy seated directly across from her was TJ Bangor, a retired NFL tight end who said he was in town to deliver a motivational speech to the men's breakfast club at the Methodist Church. Phoebe had to smile. Beating a guy like that would mean lifetime bragging rights to any man in this room. And of course, there was a cop. There was always a cop. Carl Garcia sat in the chair to her right, looking just like a detective. Mousy hair, dull eyes, faded plaid shirt, but fit and muscular like a cop with ambition. She'd thrown him some good cards to keep him happy. Chances were he was a decent player. Cops in Blind River sat on their butts a lot down at the precinct. Poker was their favorite pastime. We'll call the game at 12:00, winner takes all, Phoebe said and cut the deck. Keep your cards on the table where I can see them, please. Good luck, gentlemen. A cloud of smoke already hovered beneath the paneled ceiling. Someone lit another Cuban. Phoebe breathed it in and watched as Loyal reached over and took one for himself from the humidor on the bar. She shuffled the deck twice, then dealt the whole cards. She'd rummaged up a white button-down shirt and black vest and looked as legit as the pretty young dealer she'd seen in Atlantic City all those years ago. But she wasn't a girl anymore. A girl could get away with almost anything when it came to poker and grown men. But prison had left her run down. Bad food, bad healthcare. Her left eye drooped a little now, an injury from a fight over a bottle of ketchup. She sat up a little straighter, realizing she still had good posture, and was glad she'd had the foresight to buy some blush and lipstick from the drugstore last week. Keating checked his cards and threw two chips in the pot. Loyal adjusted the extra weight that hung over his belt buckle and glanced over at her. She hadn't looked him in the eye yet. Hated him, despite how he'd stepped up for the kids. She'd dealt him a pair of jacks and watched as he calmly trimmed the ash from his cigar. She held the deck in her hand and looked at the wall to her right while the action made its way clockwise around the table. When it was Loyal's turn to bet, he stared stubbornly into space, long enough that she had to say something. The action's on you, sir. Her eyes finally met his, and she remembered the day more than 20 years ago, when Jimmy had brought her home the day after they'd crossed the state line and eloped. Loyal had done nothing when his father sucker-punched Jimmy and screamed that he'd married trash. Things were never the same after that, and even though Jimmy had never held a grudge against his little brother, Phoebe had. And all the years since then, she and Loyal had barely spoken to each other. Keating knocked a knuckle on the felt and said,
"Check or bet?"
"Raise."
Loyal threw two black chips into the middle, but no one wanted the action and he took the pot. Phoebe pushed the chips toward him and said, "The raiser wins." After an hour, she'd worked Keating's deck to where she could read the cards like Braille. Soften the corners on the aces, split the corners on the kings with her thumbnail. Queens got dented with a fingernail halfway down the side. Jacks got the same indentation at the top. She barely had to glance at the cards when she turned them face up on the table to know what had hit the flop, the turn, or the river. The whiskey flowed. The rancher and the politician got tanked early and didn't put up much of a fight. They busted out in consecutive hands to Keating, and neither seemed to care as they drifted out of the house. The detective made her uneasy, but it was time to cast to the shallow end. She sent him a king jack and watched him suppress a smile and swallow some whiskey when TJ, that big football player, bet $100 before the flop. She glanced over at TJ's cards, saw the warped corner of an ace, and gave him a little credit for trying to steal the hand with a single ace. The other men bailed, but Garcia called the bet. Phoebe stuck another ace on the flop along with a jack and watched TJ's pupils dilate like he'd fallen in love. He bet 200 on the aces, but Garcia called with the two jacks. The turn was a three, and TJ bet another 200. Garcia stayed with him. When Phoebe stuck a third jack on the river and Garcia won with a set, TJ threw his aces in the muck, poured himself more whiskey, and tried not to pout.
"Bad beat," Garcia said.
It was a typical nice guy comment, and Phoebe smiled because deep down, she knew he had to be thrilled.
"That a Super Bowl ring?"
Garcia asked.
"Yep."
A bet like that was nothing to a man like TJ, and he played it cool. He was easily the largest man at the table, and could have bullied anyone here. She wondered how many concussions he'd had in his 20-year career, and if he'd keep his cool after getting fleeced by Keating and Loyal. There was no way he would know what was coming. Keating said,
"I saw a guy throw his wedding ring in the middle once. He was out of money and had a full house. Another guy had four kings, but he folded because he was worried that the guy's wife came with the pot."
Everyone laughed like they'd never heard the joke before. Phoebe shuffled the deck, but she was thinking about the next hand. She'd throw some good cards to TJ, put a smile back on his face. He'd bounce out soon enough on his own accord, but a guy like TJ would get his wallet out and get back in the game. He was still famous enough that his misery wouldn't be too pathetic. In fact, it would keep the night interesting. She remembered the play in his rookie year. Hell, the whole country remembered that play. He was older now, his face gray and washed out. Probably spent a lot of time in card rooms. But it was stupid to come to this town and play this home game, a game that had been around for decades. What did he expect but to lose everything in his wallet? Keating poured another tumbler of whiskey and passed the bottle around the table. With the whiskey flowing and the cards flying, the conversation turned inevitably to luck. She stifled a yawn. When it came to luck, poker players always had opinions.
I've had my share of it,
the tight end said, dropping his poker face.
But there is no luck without preparation, gentlemen. Every game I've ever won was the result of hard work.
Phoebe assumed he was borrowing material from the motivational speech he was known for on the church circuit. She stopped her eyes from rolling by staring at an old scar on the back of her hand. She'd stopped philosophizing about luck a long time ago, when she'd learned the mechanics of dealing and started sending men into the night questioning their very existence. God, luck, fate. Men might not want to believe it, but none of that mattered in poker. Not when the deck was stacked. Not when she could play any card in any player's hand any time she wanted. The longer TJ talked, the harder she stared at that scar.
Luck is a hard nut.
Keating rapped the table with his knuckles and drained the whiskey from his glass.
I've seen the whole of someone's life hanging by a thread, and I've snipped that thread myself a time or two in my courtroom. But TJ, my friend, you've always had Lady Luck by the tail. Let's get the country boy's view on luck, shall we?
Keating leaned back in his chair and rested his eyes on Loyal.
Surely, the old dog has given it some thought.
Loyal twisted his head until his neck popped.
I guess I don't know much about luck. But what TJ says makes sense. Work hard and say your prayers. You'll be okay.
Ah!
Keating motioned toward Loyal.
Didn't take you for a praying man.
Phoebe caught the lift and fall of Keating's eyebrow, the smirk on his face. The two men stared at each other briefly. Loyal stretched and tensed his fingers, showing the true size of his fist. She'd seen this before. Good cop, bad cop, getting feisty with each other. No one would suspect they were in this together. Garcia peeked at his cards and said,
As far as I can tell, luck is as reliable as a stripper on meth.
He pushed his chips to the middle.
I'm all in, and I'd feel better about it if someone would pass me that bottle.
I call,
TJ said and flipped over eights. Garcia had sevens. The hand played out and the cop busted. He pushed back from the table.
Guess I should have saved my money for the big tournament this weekend.
Buy back in. It's too early to leave,
TJ said, a slur sliding through his words. The cop poured himself a shot and said,
I'm a public servant. I don't have another thousand.
TJ stacked his chips.
I hate pushing someone out of a game so fast. Come on, Judge, let him back in. And someone tell me about this big tournament. Maybe I'll stay in town a few extra days.
Phoebe took her time gathering the cards while Keating decided.
Normally I don't do this.
He tapped the ash off his cigar.
But I have a soft spot in my heart for public servants, especially ones that move here from out of town to serve in Blind River. I'll front you 200 chips.
He smiled when he slid 20 black chips to Garcia.
My treat. You came down from Albany, right? What brought you down our way?
Been here 5 years, sir, but it still feels brand new.
He downed the whiskey.
Seems I remember hearing some story about the feds stepping in and cleaning house, getting rid of dead weight. You part of that?
I was there about that time.
Garcia poured another whiskey.
A new judge came to town. You know how that can go.
I know you ended up here, divorced.
Keating's face was deadpan, and it seemed the air got still. The men waited, shifting their eyes at each other until Garcia cleared his throat and said,
I did indeed.
Phoebe figured he'd been invited to be educated on exactly who ran this town, and knew Keating had made his point when he changed the subject.
Our annual poker tournament is a fundraiser, Mr. Bangor, for our local veterans. It'd be a great honor for you to appear if you're still in town.
If Loyal asked her to deal at the tournament, She'd come face to face with every boy she'd dated in high school and skip a shift at the diner. But she'd have to agree. She owed him that much. Keating waved his hand toward Phoebe.
Shuffle up and deal, please. These boys are getting bored.
TJ started out with a $100 bet. A 2-6-7 came on the flop, and both men liked their hands enough to bet another 100. The turn was a 4. TJ was too drunk to see there was a straight on the board and pushed all in. Loyal called him, and an 8 hit the river.
My 9's good?
TJ asked, flipping his cards over.
Not against my straight, Loyal said. Sorry, buddy. God damn it,
TJ said distractedly and swayed a little in his chair. Phoebe had seen it 1,000 times before. When luck failed, God got cursed. She pushed the pot to Loyal.
I'm down to 200,
TJ said, and bought in for another 1,000 like she'd expected.
Lots of bad beats tonight,
Keating said, reaching for the whiskey. He poured his glass full and pushed the bottle toward TJ.
Take heart, buddy. Luck changes with the wind.
The whiskey was starting to show in their eyes and on their faces. They were all drunk enough to snap if they saw her fish a card off the bottom of the deck. She still had it, the ability to stick the cards when and where she wanted, but her hands were starting to cramp. She dropped it beneath the table, stretched, and rubbed her fingers. The whiskey smelled good. A little sip would be okay, but she stifled that yearning and dealt the cards. Maybe she'd slip a beer in her coat pocket on the way out the door. Empty beer cans and whiskey bottles sat on the bar. They'd gone through 5 bags of chips and pretzels. It was near midnight when Keating said,
Final hand, boys,
and split the last of the whiskey between the 4 remaining players. Phoebe knew it was time to wind things up with a big hand when Keating smiled at her and said,
Cheers.
It was a genuine smile, and she took it to mean she'd done an adequate job. Then his eyes rested briefly on her chest, and she wondered if he'd meant something else. Keating had twice the chips as TJ. Garcia had tripled the 200 chips Keating had extended him on Goodwill. Loyal was down to 15 black chips. She was tired, but she had one more show to put on. It was time to bring the night to an end, so she chugged her bottle of water and sent the whole cards flying. Garcia shoved all in, and so did Loyal. TJ called them both, and Keating followed along. She laid out the flop, an open-ended straight. Garcia and Loyal groaned at the same time and mucked their cards. TJ was dead serious as he shoved all his chips into the middle.
I'm all in, too, Keating said, and I've got you covered.
Phoebe glanced at their stacks and figured Keating had twice what TJ had. She started to turn the last card, but TJ held up his hand to stop her. He contemplated his cards, and she could almost hear the booze washing through his frontal lobes.
Side bet,
he said, and started to pull out his wallet. Keating grabbed his wrist and said,
No, no. Your money's no good on this hand. What do you mean, no? I'm going to cover your bet with cash. There's nothing wrong with that. House rules,
Loyal said.
You can't add cash to the pot after the hand's been dealt.
Keating let go of his wrist and tapped his forefinger on the table.
You want to cover that bet? You got to use what's already on the table. Everything I got is already in the pot. Not everything.
Keating pointed with his chin.
You got that ring? This.
TJ laughed, his bloodshot eyes going wide.
My Super Bowl ring.
Phoebe's grip tightened on the deck of cards. Her hand cramped. She'd been staring at that ring, had never seen one with so many stones. Only a drunk would use it to cover a bet. But she'd seen some crazy bets go down between inmates, like the time 2 upstate girls went after each other with blades over a bar of soap. Keating, seemingly unfazed by all the booze he'd sucked down, said,
Yeah, you've been flashing it all night. In my house, you only bet what's on the table. It's late, Loyal said. What's it gonna be?
TJ stared at the ring, wagged his head from side to side. He drained his glass and lifted his chin toward Keating.
Normally I'd say no, but I got the best hand and I'm not letting you bluff me off it.
He worked the ring off his finger and set it on top of chips. The diamonds caught the overhead light. Lots of diamonds, lots of gold.
Show me a winner,
Keating said and motioned to Phoebe. She turned the last card. Her hand ached with the motion, but she managed to pull the ace off the bottom of the deck. It snagged on the top card that was slightly out of place, but she recovered quickly and landed it on the table. She felt sure TJ had missed the fumble.
Turn them over, gentlemen, she said, staring hard at the green felt.
Keating turned his cards over first. The ace gave him a full house. TJ sank into his chair. His straight was beat. Loyal and Garcia pushed back from the table like they didn't want any part of what happened next. Phoebe set the deck down but kept her hands in front of her just in case a fist came flying. TJ slammed his hand on the table and the ring tumbled toward Keating. When Keating chuckled, Phoebe thought the whole thing might have been a joke. But he picked it up and slipped it over a knuckle, inspecting its facets in the overhead light.
You know I can't let you keep that,
TJ said, and reached his palm across the table.
What did you say earlier about speaking at the Methodist Church? Seems to me you're a man of your word. Isn't that so?
I am a man of my word, sir, but I want that ring back.
A man of his word only bets what he can afford to lose. And when he loses, he takes responsibility for his actions.
TJ's jaw went slack as his face shifted, and he went pale for the second time that night. Keating took the ring off and said,
I shouldn't gloat.
He put the ring in his breast pocket.
Don't worry, son. I'll keep her safe.
TJ shook his head and pointed a finger at Phoebe.
That ace come off the top.
Keating used his courtroom tone.
Don't blame her. She dealt those cards straight. You paid her, though. She got paid out of the buy-ins, but you picked her. I hired her for the evening. Nobody made you place that bet. You lost fair and square. I want to hear her say it.
He leaned over the table toward Phoebe, his breath foul with whiskey and cigars.
Lady, say you didn't cheat me. Say it in front of the cop.
He motioned toward Garcia. Keating raised his voice and stood up.
I'm telling you, there's no cheating in my house.
TJ pushed himself upright, but it took a moment for his feet to move. Phoebe watched him carefully. A man that big and drunk could take this place apart in seconds. He picked up his coat and turned toward the door.
Cheat,
he said with as much scorn as the booze made possible and walked out of the room. It made her queasy to think she'd been part of that hand. The ring was worth thousands, enough to elevate a charge to grand larceny. She took her time collecting the chips and placing them back in their case, hoping to give TJ plenty of time to get to his car and drive into the night, hoping the cop hadn't been watching too closely when that last ace appeared. Garcia stood.
I don't think he should be driving.
The front door slammed shut. Keating raised his voice.
Leave him alone. He's a grown man.
Garcia draped his coat over his shoulder, looked toward the hall and asked Keating,
Are you really going to keep that thing? I want it fair and square.
He reached out and shook Garcia's hand.
Thanks for coming tonight, son. It's always nice to have someone from downtown in my home.
The implication was clear. Keating meant to use the cop's presence to prove the game had been legit. He'd invited the cop and expected loyalty in return. It chilled her how effortlessly some men wielded power. Garcia shook his head.
Thanks for inviting me. But what are you going to do with it? Add it to my collection of priceless items handed to me over the years by drunk men, he said. But first, I'll get it appraised.
A car engine started up outside. Tires squealed.
Let's go,
Loyal said. He pointed at Phoebe.
You're square with her?
Keating's eyes slid from her cleavage to her mouth.
Of course. I always treat the ladies right.
The look he gave her made Phoebe wonder if she should stay behind a minute, see what might come of things. It had been so long. His hair was gray, but it was full, and his belly wasn't as big as most men his age. As far as she knew, he'd never been married, never had kids. This house was too big for one person. Maybe he was lonely too. But then he yawned and she reconsidered. It had been too many years anyway. Maybe if he gave her that same look another time, like in the diner when he dropped in each morning to fill his thermos with coffee. Maybe then, but not tonight. She buttoned her coat and followed Loyal and Garcia outside. Low-slung oak trees lined the avenue. Streetlights glowed in the cold night air. Garcia offered them a ride. She'd die before she ever rode in a car with a cop again. No thanks. I need the exercise. The three of them walked to the end of the drive.
I'm just over there, Loyal said, pointing his key fob.
A truck made an awful honk and its parking lights flashed obnoxiously.
New Dodge?
Garcia asked.
Yeah,
Loyal said.
Nice.
The cop jiggled his car keys. It was obvious that he'd been upset by that last bet and wasn't ready to let it go.
Man, you ever see anything like that?
Garcia asked.
Like what?
Loyal asked.
A straight beat by a full house?
Not that,
Garcia said, his voice incredulous.
He took that man's ring.
The two men stood under the streetlight. Garcia shook a cigarette from his pack, lit it, and offered one to Loyal.
I think he took a lot more than his ring,
Loyal said, tipping his chin and exhaling a cloud of smoke over the cop's head. The cop scraped his shoe against the curb.
What do you mean? The way I see it,
Loyal said, climbing into his truck.
He took his soul.
Phoebe started walking. Their door slammed shut. The engine started up. She jammed her hands deep into her pockets and picked up her pace for the dark walk home. Chapter 7. The next morning, Carl Garcia slipped inside the sanctuary 1 minute before 9 and took a seat near the aisle. The nave of the church was plain and unadorned, with drab pine paneling, walls that hadn't been painted in decades, and threadbare wall-to-wall carpeting. Off to one side, behind the pulpit, T.J. Bangor sat slack-eyed and pale in an ornately carved high-backed chair, going over the notes for his speech, buttoning and unbuttoning the tweed jacket that fit a little too snug across his middle. During the minister's introduction, Garcia learned that TJ had been one of the few in his class to get drafted into the NFL before his senior year at Ohio State, and that after a long football career, he'd gone back to finish his degree in communications and launched a second career helping others pursue their dreams through a relationship with God. The minister droned on, and the more Garcia thought about that poker game, the more unsettled he got. It wasn't the money. Garcia knew he wasn't a good player and hadn't expected to win. He also knew that losing had earned him more favor with the judge than if he'd won. But he wasn't sure he wanted the judge's favor anymore. Not if it meant putting up with swipes at old wounds. Who brought up a man's divorce in front of a group like that? Keating was connected throughout New York, and everyone in law enforcement at the time knew Garcia's wife had left him for a circuit court judge. It had wiped out his credibility within the force and left him no alternative but to leave town. When he'd gotten a job in this little town, he'd told everyone his leaving had to do with the department's reorganization. But everyone knew the truth. He was just saving face. For 5 years now, he'd kept his head down and worked his way to detective. He figured the promotion had earned him the invitation. The game wasn't illegal. The stakes set and agreed on by the players. But the dealing had seemed shady. He knew Phoebe Elders had done time and was pretty certain she'd been working that deck. She'd probably learned a lot of bad habits in prison. He took off his jacket, loosened his tie, and was glad for the padded red cushions on the pew that vaguely matched the carpet. He'd been to every church in town over the years, funerals and such, and only the Methodists had the decency to provide seat cushions. This morning he was grateful for them, and for the aspirin he'd taken before leaving home. The minister stepped away from the pulpit, prompting applause as TJ heaved his big frame up from the chair. The tweed was a nice touch, even if the gray tones matched the shadows below his eyes. In the dull light of this dim little church, the man's face was as colorless as egg white. Judging from the hollowed-out man standing at the pulpit, Garcia thought it could be true what Loyal Elders had said last night, that Keating had taken his soul. But to Garcia, the loss of the man's soul wasn't as worrisome as his health. He seemed a little caved in, like he'd been punched in the chest. TJ was talking now, reading from some notes he'd pulled from his jacket pocket.
but the microphone hadn't been adjusted to his height, and Garcia heard only a few words. The air in the church was stale and warm. TJ seemed disoriented, pausing between sentences to swig water from a plastic bottle. Garcia had seen a man pass out from a hangover, but a man that size might take down the whole pulpit. TJ tugged at his collar, trying to find his stride. Sweat soaked his forehead and dripped down his temples. TJ adjusted the microphone higher and held up his fingers. His personal guide to success consisted of 3 bullet points. Prepare hard, show up, and trust God. He dropped his hand to the pulpit and leaned toward the audience.
Success isn't rocket science. It's guts and determination.
The men of the Methodist Breakfast Club waited for more, and TJ finally got to the story they'd all come to hear.
We were on the 50-yard line, with 8 seconds on the clock. Coach called for a Hail Mary. It was a long shot, but it was our only hope.
That play had made every highlight reel. Garcia had seen it at least 100 times. TJ was the guy you wanted on your team, the guy who could jump higher than the defenders, the guy who could land on his head and still hold on to the ball. As he talked, spit flew from his mouth and his hair fell into his eyes. Garcia recalled his own glorious moment on the high school team, the block he'd thrown that allowed the quarterback to connect with the receiver in the end zone. The tackle had cost him a groin injury, but had won him the heart of the girl who, for better or worse, would become his wife. But TJ Bangor had won more than a game, more than a girl. He had lived every player's dream. He paused and wiped the sweat from his forehead, panting as though he had just finished that play once more. He'd been knocked unconscious, but when they'd carried him off the field on a stretcher, he'd still had a death grip on the ball. Now, he pointed at each man, making eye contact with as many of them as possible.
These life lessons can make you a champion too.
TJ pushed out his chest and stood as tall as his frame would allow. Garcia had to give it to him. An hour ago, he'd probably sucked down a handful of Tylenol and a quart of Gatorade, and he'd probably been thinking about losing that Super Bowl ring. The men in the audience stood and applauded as TJ walked down the center aisle to introduce himself and shake hands. What a life, Garcia thought, to have grown men pay $50 a pop for breakfast and a good story. Who wouldn't want that gig? When TJ got to his aisle, Garcia said,
Quite a speech, TJ.
He reached out to shake his hand, smiling hard to make sure the lines around his eyes crinkled. In his years as a cop, he'd learned that if a smile didn't make it to your eyes, it meant nothing. He clasped TJ's shoulder, hoping that he'd remember him from last night. TJ stood 12 inches over Garcia. His size alone was intimidating. Teeth the size of marbles, and a face as wide as a catcher's mitt.
Garcia, right? From last night.
TJ slid his arm around Garcia's shoulder and turned him away from the crowd. He bent over slightly and lowered his voice.
You got a minute? Yeah, sure.
They stepped away from the others.
You're a cop, right?
TJ wiped his face with a handkerchief.
That judge, Keating, you know him? Everyone in town knows him. I asked around. That game's got a reputation. I don't think it's on the up and up.
One of the ushers opened the double doors at the entrance and flooded the foyer with light. Garcia squinted. He'd heard the rumors. TJ leaned in.
The more I think about it, the more I think I got played.
Garcia nodded like it might be possible, though he was reluctant to admit he'd been thinking about that ring all night, too.
Huh. So tell me, how did you get invited to the game? I'm here to give a speech. Word gets around. I got a call,
TJ said.
You saw what happened. All that whiskey and betting the ring. That wasn't my idea. You called the bet, though. No one made you. I was on a roll. I mean, what are the chances he hits a boat same time I get a straight? It happens. I've seen it before. I want that ring back. You have no.